There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast.
On the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
My voice isn't warmed up yet. Let me get my voice warmed.
Oh, no. You gotta do it like mine. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They are days of the week. They are days of the month.
That's Thursday. That's not Friday. Warm up.
I can drink today. It is Friday. It is Saturday. I can drink all day today. It is Saturday.
It has to be a limerick. Sunday. It has to be a limerick type.
Runny eggs, sticky legs.
There you go. It kind of works.
Oh, and my voice is warmed up.
All right. Welcome to the show. This is the last podcast. On the left, I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. I think his voice is warmed up now.
Thank you, Ben. Yes, my voice is as warmed up as it's ever been. Can you hear how oily it is? Oh, it's like the backside of a young Greek boy at a parliamentary meeting. So covered in olive oil.
Yes.
Is that what they use in Greece to have sex with each other, or is that a racist thought?
No, I think that is a racist thought. Yeah, they just use lube like everybody else.
Like everybody else does.
But they do use grease instead of water at their parks.
That's a different story.
Really, you slide fast.
Because they like to come out and see they want the grass to look like the tops of their sons' heads.
Right.
Just spiked heads. They're like, look at that. It's like, it's going to club. Grass is ready to go to club.
That's correct. There's no way that is just completely inaccurate.
No way.
No, not at all.
Not that I've ever been to Greece or seen a picture of anywhere within Greece.
It's a beautiful country. All right, so today we have a great, we are beginning a multi-parter on the Hillside Stranglers.
Yeah, it's time for another heavy hitter, everybody.
I'll catch the ball for you, little Timmy. Oh, I caught the ball.
Well, then I'll give it to me so I can have a memory.
No, I won't. Life is cruel.
It's a brutal game.
Now, the Hillside Stranglers, often erroneously referred to in the singular due to the press originally reporting them as such, were a pair of serial killers and rapists that operated in Los Angeles over a period of 5 months from October 1977 until February of 1978, racking up a kill count of 10. The Hillside Stranglers were so named because the vast majority of the victims' bodies were found dumped down hillsides in the Los Angeles area, usually away from residential areas.
Right around where I used to stay in Glendale.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't realize that when I saw the auto body shop for the first time, Bono's Auto Body Shop, that was 2 blocks from where I was staying.
Wow.
And I went over there and just cruising for ladies flipping a coin, and they're like, I seem to remember a guy just like you.
You were the hillside huggler.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, let me hug.
Come on, just let me give it a little bit of a hug. It's free. It doesn't cost anything.
Free hugs from a creepy guy? I'll take it. So they killed 10 in five months, so they were getting paid bimonthly, if they take that.
if they got paid for it.
Well, I think the body was the payment.
It's for the body all of, the payment?
The body is the payment for your hard work.
That is disgusting. I just see how your gears turn a little bit.
No.
Again, you can't. Don't open up the curtain too far. We will all be arrested.
Oh, I see.
Now, the perpetrators were a pair of cousins by adoption. Kenneth Bianchi, the more submissive of the two, and Angelo Bono, by far the more dominant and among the most despicable creatures we have ever covered.
Now, can you imagine at some point when they said Hillside Strangler and they're looking at it and Bono's literally be like, you mean to tell me they don't think only one guy can do what we do? I think they should look at our stuff and think, it's got to be like 9 or 10 guys.
Cool guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, buddy. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Use mayonnaise to make my hair stick back.
That's not bad. I'd like to lick your head.
But before we get to that piece of shit, let's start with the life of Kenneth Bianchi, or as he was known to his friends, Kenny.
I'm surprised he didn't go by Kennifer.
Yeah, Kennifer sounds good. Well, he had to marry a Jennifer.
Oh.
Now, Kenneth Alessio Bianchi was born in Rochester, New York in 1951 to a 17-year-old alcoholic prostitute who immediately gave him up for adoption. The official adoption report described her as, quote, a pathetic creature of limited intelligence.
You know that she was kind of funny accidentally.
Yeah, but can we just say this guy who wrote the adoption report, he's editorializing a bit.
Like,
just
come on,
the
buddy.
Facts, okay?
Come on, buddy. Just write where he came from. You don't have to, like, quantify the mother.
Yes.
What I would also say is, What I like is in true crime in general, the way they describe women in the past is about how, like, you got a book that called her a prostitute, where I was reading the Darcy O'Brien book where they describe her as a happy-go-lucky go-go dancer.
I like the latter. I think that's how I'm going to remember his mother.
Yeah, I just think...
A happy-go-lucky 15-year-old, no, excuse me, 17-year-old go-go dancer.
16 when she got pregnant.
That's all right. She was a performer.
Yeah.
Now, Kinney was placed in a foster home into the care of an elderly alcoholic woman who shuttled him from neighbor to neighbor, depriving the child of any real human connections for the first 3 months of its life. And although not quite the same, this is very interesting. The famous Harlow experiments of the 1950s demonstrated how important this connection can be to a person immediately following birth.
Whatever. My mom tossed me around like a basketball with all the other doctors while the Harlem Globetrotters theme played, and it just it embedded, and it made me a born performer.
For some reason, I feel like your parents wouldn't let you be held by a black person. So I'm going to have to call you out on a violent lie.
Now, in this experiment, rhesus monkeys were separated from their mother at birth, then raised by two surrogate monkey mother machines.
It's just fun to say monkey mother machines.
I mean,
it sounds like a children's book that ends up very sad.
Right. Now, one machine dispensed milk, but was made from bare wire mesh. The other monkey machine was made of terry cloth, but dispensed no milk whatsoever. Invariably, the monkeys chose to cuddle with the terry cloth monkey instead of drinking the milk that they needed to survive.
Now, dog meat, didn't your parents do the same thing to you, but instead of milk coming out of the fake monkey's teat, it was brine?
Oh, that sounds good.
That's why you like pickle dinner so much now?
Oh, man, I had pickle dinner last night.
Yeah. You did?
Yeah, me and pickle girlfriend.
You know, when it comes down to it, is her podcast nickname the pickle girlfriend? Because she's not going to enjoy that.
No, she's going to hate that.
She's really going to hate that.
She actually loves it.
What I would say is the pickle dinner thing is going from a cute thing to a sign of extreme poverty.
But he's not. He's wealthier than he's ever been. I just don't get it.
Now, in another experiment, two monkeys were given two separate monkey machines, one wire mesh and one terry cloth, but this time, both monkey mother machines dispensed milk. Mm. And although both of the monkeys nursed from the bottle, the behaviors of the monkeys were wildly different.
Mm. It's wrong to say to open a coffee shop named Harlow's where the milk dispensers were these terry cloth covered and wire mesh monkey mothers.
I would absolutely love to go there, and it would make sense the coffee is $5 then. And it would be good.
Now, when the two monkeys were scared by loud objects, the object of choice by Harlow being a large teddy bear that constantly beat a bass drum. Mm. The cloth monkeys retreated to the quote-unquote mother, while the wire monkey just rolled around on the floor screaming.
Like a go-go dancer.
Like a happy-go-lucky go-go dancer.
Yeah.
And Harlow found that this mimicked the behavior of children that were deprived of both physical and emotional contact as babies, as well as that of institutionalized adults.
You know, I'm just happy that the bass player, the drummer from the Chuck E. Cheese band, he got all that work.
He got all that work. Yeah. It's just like, they said I was out. They said that I was living too close to the edge, but I showed them the brand continues.
So what are you doing now?
Oh, I'm a fake monkey mother in a laboratory somewhere. They won't let me know where. They blindfold me before I go in, but I get all the cigarettes I can consume.
All right.
Now, while Harlow estimated that the quote-unquote point of no return for humans as far as physical and emotional contact went was about 6 months, Bianchi, having nothing of the sort for only 3 months, almost certainly affected him, particularly when that was paired with what was to come.
Well, apparently he would literally be left alone in a bassinet, just sitting in a corner, nobody looking at him. He would be shot. He had like something like 6 foster homes before he ended up in the Bianchi home. Well, literally as a baby, no one touched it, no one looked at him, no one gave a shit about him, and that's got to create a psychological like reverberation in somebody's mind.
It made him
a glass person.
Well, that's the one thing about the end of Rosemary's Baby. She's so upset, but that child is going to be taken care of forever.
Think about the child care. That's free child care.
It's like, yes, you're half devil, but everyone will cater to your every whim.
And I'll tell you what, Mary Poppins and any other generation in the UK would have had a stake put through her vagina out her mouth, and she would have been burned like a kebab.
Yeah, like Cannibal Holocaust.
So think about it.
Wow.
Kinney was adopted 3 months in by Nicholas Bianchi and Francis Cioleone Bianchi.
Good, just traditional Italian names.
Cioleone Bianchi?
Yeah. It means crooked back. Bitch.
No, because bitch does not mean that.
Bianchi means bitch in Italian.
No, I don't.
Now, she was an extremely neurotic woman who would do untold damage to her son throughout the course of his childhood with constant smothering and an almost pathological obsession about Ken's health. Now, at first, that was limited to insanely frequent doctor's visits for minor ailments, but that all changed when, in 1957, Kenny fell from a jungle gym at school and banged his head on the ground.
Oh, no. I fell off the top of a table in the lunchroom while I was doing a bit of a show. I was getting some attention to myself, and I fell off the top of the lunch table, bashed my head against the radiator, and I completely knocked myself unconscious, and they left me there because they thought I was making a joke.
Yeah. And, of course, a radiator is just a radiator with cool glasses on it.
Yeah.
I used to do somersaults into the corner of my walls.
Man, no sign of weird levels of autism in either one of us.
Not at all.
I used to drink milk through my nose. Well, kids loved it.
You're weird, Marcus.
That is a weird kid. He's weird. Yeah.
Now, as we all know, serial killers are lousy with head injuries. Almost 25% of serial killers and mass murderers either had a definite or suspected serious head injury at one point in their life, most of them suffering from it in childhood. Mm. And following the injury, Francis took Kenny out of school for the rest of the year and isolated him in their home.
I had to go work at the newspaper stand selling oranges with the other orphans.
People were just buying oranges and newspapers?
For a pence. A pipe for half a pence. Please, I ain't got no parents, just the many bugs that live in my bed.
This was the 1990s in New York City, right?
None of that is real.
Oh, okay.
None of that is true.
Now, soon after, Ken began to suffer from grand mal seizures, and again, as we many times see in serial killers, he began to wet his pants with great frequency.
I will also say again, quote unquote, grand mal seizures. John Wayne Gacy did the same exact thing. Mm-hmm. Where you begin to learn we're going to go into this now about Kenny, is that when you begin to learn the feedback loop of acting sick and getting the attention that you need, and that basically scratches the itch.
Right. So the word that I saw most to describe Ken's habits was dribbling. He did wet the bed, yes, but he also had the tendency to continually wet his pants throughout the day. Dribbling.
Yeah, he's a real Steph Curry of pissing his pants.
Yeah, he's a real Abe Vigoda.
Warm-up games, yeah.
Yeah, my grandfather used to piss his pants, and we just said that was because he had a hard time in the war.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, at first, Francis tried physical punishment, spanking him before he went to the bathroom to make sure he drained himself out enough where he wouldn't later dribble in his pants.
Hey, if this is getting you hard right now, just leave the office. Just go talk to somebody. And if it is making you hard, good for you.
I say good for you.
All right.
Yeah. Now, when that didn't work, Francis started taking him to a string of doctors who, as is standard medical practice, probed and examined his genitals again and again, each time causing pain, humiliation, and fear.
Hey there, Kenny. Why don't you come inside? You want a glass of wine? Come over here and perch up on my knee, little Kenny. Did anyone ever call you Kenifer?
No, I didn't. Never.
Anyways,
got that.
Why don't you? No.
No.
No. Never got that. You know what's funny? Because you look like a Kenifer. Why don't you take off that shirt? You look a little tight. I'm going to take off my shirt, too. So you've been peeing your pants, huh?
No, I'm...
You've been peeing your pants?
I'm dribbling.
Yeah, you doing a little dribbling?
I'm dribbling.
Why don't you do it for me? Do it for me.
I'm dribbling.
I'm going to press in your bladder until you do it for me, all right? There it goes. Man, this is great. I love being a pediatrician.
Yeah, there's no way I'm going to kill. There's no way.
One psychiatrist suggested that this constant probing of the genitals, instigated by his mother, could very well have been construed as something very close to rape in young Ken's mind.
Whatever.
I mean, so...
That's true. It is probably rape.
I just don't understand what she was thinking. Initially, she just beat him before he went to the bathroom, and then that didn't work, so she brought him to a rape den.
Well, she brought him to a doctor, where, and you bring him frequently. It's a weird, like, fate helped shape him. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're bringing him to a man of power, somebody you're supposed to trust, a doctor that's supposed to give your parents the answer to your quote-unquote elusive health problem, and literally all he's doing is molesting you.
And at this time, people really did trust the doctor.
Absolutely. And it would have been okay if it would have just been one doctor. Like, one doctor, that's fine. Kids go in for these sorts of medical treatments all the time. The doctors have to do what they have to do to find out what's wrong with the kid.
Yeah, but they always got to tug and pull on the penis if you're peeing your pants all the time. That's how it goes.
I'm here for the flu. I have a headache.
Let me just tug on your penis like three or four more times.
Yeah, seems strange.
But Ken, he was taken to half a dozen doctors over and over and over again.
So he got a reputation.
Yeah.
Walking in there all sauntery, 7 years old, penis pants. What do you think's going to fucking happen?
True story. The first time I got a physical, I was 12 years old. I didn't get the physical. I walked into the room with my mother, the doctor's office. My mother left the room, and the guy's like, take down your pants. And I was like, what happened? I started freaking out, screaming.
No!
No one told me I was about to get a physical.
Huge man child.
Oh, it's awful.
Like,
why don't you come and take them off yourself? Yeah. You fucking pervert.
My God. It's awful.
I'm so glad. I was afraid this story was going to be opposite. You just walk through the waiting room with no pants on.
I'm here to be checked.
And not only did Ken get these constant probings from doctors, but Francis even made him wear sanitary napkins every time they went out.
I actually don't think this mother wasn't trying. You know, I mean, if he is dribbling, there weren't diapers around that would fit a man his size. Just put some napkins in there.
It goes into certain areas. It reminds me of Otis Tool, where they would dress him up as a little girl because he acted fey. It talks about, like they would do these things where it's a sick fascination with the peeing of his pants.
Yeah.
But she's just sick of doing the laundry every damn day.
I don't know, though. I think you just put diapers on him and you'd make it a silent problem. That's how other people dealt with it. Except for talk with comedian Jermaine Fowler, who told me he peed his pants until the age of 12. And I said, that's really fucked up, because we were talking about Kenneth Bianchi peeing his pants. And he said, he just did it out of pure laziness.
Well, we'll keep an eye on him.
Did you have that conversation in confidence?
What?
I think it'll be fun.
Now, Ken did indeed have some slight physical problems. The majority of it was psychosomatic. He was reacting to his mother's extreme neuroses. Mm. These are notes from a parent-teacher conference from 1958. This is what they said.
Mrs. Bianchi is a very nervous person, easily upset. As a result, Ken is also nervous and wets his pants. Check his health record. Mother needs to be calmed down.
Mother needs to be calmed down.
Mother needs to be calmed down.
You're editorializing your parent-teacher meeting a little bit.
Oh, yeah, mommy needs to get a little bit of a pet before she goes to sleep. Ooh, and thinks me teacher needs to be doing it.
Yeah, did she send him to, like, creepy school and creepy doctor?
I guess it's what happens when you live in Touchem downstairs, Pennsylvania.
Oh, I guess so. Yeah, just go to, like, a Methodist school. Yeah,
everybody.
Those are nice.
Yeah, strangely enough, his hometown, Rochester, New York. Same name as my hometown, Rochester, Texas.
Wow.
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 You know, there's a Hollywood, Florida, and a Hollywood, California.
What I say, what really creeped me up is I was reading a series of serial killer interviews called Serial Killers Up Close and Personal, and I opened it up, and it was on May 22nd, and as I opened it up, it was like, Kenneth Bianchi was born on May 22nd, blah, 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 and I was like, oh, man!
Is that your birthday?
Dang. No, my birthday's May 1st, Walpurgisnacht.
Now, Kenny, he responded to his mother's imagined illnesses in kind. It was said that during a stay in a hospital to examine his urinary problems over a course of days and weeks, he was reasonably well behaved until his mother showed up.
Now, what we're going to see here is the cycle that Kenny's going to go through the rest of his life, where he is going to see that lying helps cover up problems he has with his potential and problems that he has. Basically, in order to feel normal, he needs to lie about his circumstances all the time.
Fake it till you make it.
But this time, he was just faking it, and he never makes it.
No, he doesn't make it. Well, I mean, I guess he made it for himself.
I was reading a book called The Hillside Stranglers by Darcy O'Brien, which is a bit antiquated, and she described Kenny's nature as a child in a very foppish way. Mm-hmm.
Kenny appears to have risen from the cradle to sembling. By the time he could talk, Frances knew she was coping with a compulsive liar, and his childhood unfolded as one of idleness and gold-bricking. Would you believe the flim-flammery? You believe the charcuterie that comes from the mouth of this babe?
I mean, if you have a child who is a liar, put them in acting school. That's all they are.
That's all we do.
That's all you people do.
I put on a fake name. I put on clothes that are not mine. I'm no one and everyone.
No, as soon as Francis Bianchi walked through the door of the hospital, the show began, with one doctor noting that Ken Bianchi was, quote, a little minx on the floor.
It's gross.
This reminds me of Madonna doing the Like a Virgin performance for the Music Video Awards, which is just rolling around. But yeah. It's just a little boy going like,
can't control me. I'm slippery like oil, like a flappery fish.
I'm just so, you know, I feel weird. it makes me feel strange.
Now, this was obviously an attempt to gain his mother's love and approval. But at the same time, Kenny also felt a highly suppressed anger, forming a love-hate relationship with his mother that we also see in a lot of serial killers. In an FBI study, 66% of serial killers reported their mother as the dominant parent.
And Ed Gein, obviously. It's because they feel dependent on their mother's attention, and then they get bitter about the fact that they're dependent on their mother for this attention.
Yeah.
And because they have a superiority complex. Bianchi, at this point, is going to start realizing, oh, I'm smarter than everybody else. I can outperform people at a very young age. I can make them think whatever it is I want them to think, but his mom still controls him. So he's got these two forces just slamming against each other that will make him kill women for years.
Yeah. And he wasn't he wasn't a dullard either. Like, he actually had an IQ of about 116.
That's normal.
Yeah, he was, well, that's actually above average. Yeah. And so, but he was also just an extremely lazy student. Never applied himself.
It does take a certain amount of intelligence to lie, though, correct?
Yeah. It absolutely does.
But there's also an instinctual lying. It's kind of like Otis Toole, Henry Lucas, where they just kind of have that muscle kind of built into them to be a little thief, be a little criminal immediately.
Yeah, they were actually very good at it. Ken Bianchi was actually very bad at it. Yeah. He was just a pathological liar. He would lie for no reason whatsoever. And in fact, when they asked him as an adult why he lied so much, he said, "Beats the crackers out of me."
Meanwhile, he's just got a fucking tie around a woman's neck. He's like, "Golly gee, I don't know how I got myself in this circumstance."
Beats the crackers out of me.
Now, in addition to all of this, Ken came very close to completing the serial killer triad of bedwetting, pyromania, and animal abuse, once killing a cat and leaving it on his neighbor's front porch as a Halloween prank.
It's funny.
Yeah, now I was reading that, and I have to say, that is a great Halloween prank.
It's a very funny prank. It's kind of like TBS's motto. Very funny.
Very funny.
Now, Ken's father, maybe not so surprisingly, spent most of his time either at work or gambling at the horse track.
You mean to tell me he didn't want to deal with his big, fat, overmothering wife and his pee-pants son? Hey. His fake son. But actually, adoption is more... It actually shows more love than having a child, because everybody wants to fuck.
Right.
Well, actually, the reason why they couldn't have a child was because Frances had health problems and she had to get a hysterectomy at a fairly young age.
More like a Hirsch. Hysterectomy. That's what it should have been called.
No, it's a hysterectomy.
Hysterectomy, because that makes it more with the times. It makes it more woke.
Good point.
Now, it may also not come as much of a surprise that as Kenny passed into adolescence, he started spending more time with his father. But unfortunately, just as those bonds were being formed, Ken's father died suddenly of a heart attack, exhausted from years of overwork at the foundry, and no doubt just a little bit frazzled by his home life.
He just probably when he looked in the mirror and finally was just like, "Can I die now?"
Yes.
Thank God I can. All right. Just let go. Like,
and this may be like later on we see that Ken Bianchi treats Angelo Bono as sort of a hero worship father figure. Mm-hmm. Because right as he was just starting to form his very first bonds with another man, he dies.
Exactly. Yeah. And then Bono, we're going to see, is a sort of uber masculine character. And then he's going to connect to that because he's been overmothered his whole childhood.
Yeah. And masculine in quotations.
Yeah. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah. Like people who really love Chuck Norris think of as masculine.
Guys who think that Chuck Norris jokes are funny.
Yeah. Legitimately funny. Yeah. And they actually don't even think they're jokes. They think they're real statements.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, soon after his father's death, Bianchi lost his virginity in what sounds like a weird name. neighborhood gangbang.
I think this stuff happened a lot more in the 70s.
I think this was like a 50s and 60s type of thing. It's like a, you know, like, remember in Porky's?
And they would suck their dick through the hole.
When they all went out to the cabin in the woods to all have sex with the prostitute. Yeah. In which it turned into a real funny prank.
There was a lot of mayhem and shenanigans.
But it did sound like a bunch of young boys were going to go kill a grown woman in a cabin somewhere.
Yeah. Porky's.
Yeah, about a dozen teenage boys, they all lined up to have this sex with this girl in a treehouse. This type of girl, the high school boys, they referred to girls like this as round heels.
Well, that was her Indian name. Her real name was Marietta Tombicicleta.
Very
nice. Italian.
Yeah.
Now, the fact that Kenny's first sexual experience was essentially using a female as nothing more than a literal object, standing in line with a bunch of guys like he was going to go on a ride at Six Flags, like, that may have informed his opinion of women just
a little
bit.
Look at a bunch of guys sitting around flipping coins being like, yeah, this is the coolest we'll ever be. I can't wait for all of us to tag team this poor, innocent woman.
I mean, I don't know. I'd flip it and say that they're the dumb meatbags.
Yeah,
you know,
course.
She's just getting stuffed every which way. I'm sure she was loving every moment of it.
I mean, she was a 14-year-old girl.
Well, let's make her 18. Let's make her 18.
This is good revisionist history. This is like your Games of Throning this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Change it up a little bit.
No, soon after high school, Kenny married a local girl named Laura who had also grown up with a dominant mother. And when Laura and Kenny would argue, they'd call their respective mothers and ask them to settle the score for them.
I kind of actually love this technique.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine calling my mother in to solve a problem for me, which is like call her to like talk to Natalie and being like,
no, you have to talk to Natalie's mother.
Oh, God.
It's like BattleBots. Your mother is the bot, and you just like control it.
I'm just afraid for Natalie's mother to deal with my mother.
Well, then you win every argument.
Oh, no. The mothers don't come into contact with each other. It's mother by proxy.
Oh.
Yeah. You call up the mother. You tell her what's going on. The mother tells you what you should say and what you should do and who's right.
Well, my mom says you should say, I'm sorry, and make me 4 lasagnas.
Yeah, I was under the impression the mother was like Rocky and Kenny was like Mickey. And he's like, get in the ring. You can kick his ass. Kick his ass, Ma.
Ma, get out of here.
Now, after an extremely turbulent 8 months of marriage, Laura left with another man without a word, driven away, as friends later said, by Ken's extreme insecurity and immature nature. He was one of those guys who literally wagged his finger in your face during an argument.
Oh, man, just asking to get fucking punk slapped. Yeah. But also, Bianchi, at this point, was going through Catholic school, and Darcy O'Brien says that it left a very specific impression on him about women, where he had the very classic virgin whore mentality about women. Mm. And so with her, he could go and fuck whoever he wanted, but she had to show up when he called her. Like, she had to show up, be where he, basically tell him her plans for the entire week, and she better stick to it or he was going to freak out.
Yeah, exactly. And that mother whore complex, I mean, boy howdy did that put one hell of an impression on him.
Well, boy howdy did it ever.
cheese and crackers. I can't believe what that mother whore thing did to the women later on in his life.
Beats the crackers out of me.
But of course, the disintegration of the marriage wasn't Kenny's fault whatsoever, according to him. Uh-huh. And he talked constantly of the world, quote unquote, dumping on him.
Ugh. Well, it was just kind of ironic because he's always dribbling.
Pee pants.
He got pee pee pants.
Poor Kennifer.
Now, in Ken's eyes, one friend said he never did anything wrong. And not only had his wife abandoned him, but it seemed like his mother was about to do the same thing. She had recently remarried and had all but forgotten about her son.
Oh, God. Mommy.
Yeah.
Why doesn't mommy want to touch my pee-pee anymore to see if it's leaking?
Can you imagine being the guy on the date with his mother when she's just like the third date and he's like, this is really going well. Mom, and she's like, I have to tell you about my son.
My son, he's a human sprinkler.
Now, it is very interesting to note that between 1971 and 1973, three women were strangled to death in Rochester, New York, the first woman dying around the time that Kenny's wife left him.
It's very weird circumstantial coincidences yeah. about Kenny's time period at this point with the falling out with his wife, mm-hmm. His mother marrying the other man, and these murders. It's called the Alphabet Murders, which is they were called the Alphabet Murders because their names were literary names. All of the girls murdered had the first letter was the same for their first name and their last name, and it was connected to that letter was the same first letter as the places around Rochester where they were found.
Mm.
So it was a very highly put together murder sequence. Somebody was purposely killing girls in this way. Pretty eerily similar in the way that the Hillside Stranglers would go on to kill women. And Kenny was also lumped into the investigation for that, but there was no evidence to convict him.
I mean, I gotta say, it's better that they're purposely killing them as opposed to accidentally, because what a terrible day that would be.
Or if you're the
killer.
I just
accidentally strangled three women.
But no, you look at the killers looking at me like, huh, look at all the letters all matching up. That's kind of funny.
That's funny.
Yeah. Huh. No, I mean, I really don't know if Kim Bianchi was responsible for this murders, because it doesn't necessarily fit in with the serial killer habits, because these women died from 1971 to 1973, but there was still a period of 2 years that Kim Bianchi lived in Rochester, New York, in which no women were strangled in this manner whatsoever.
That's true, but it's very, it's just highly coincidental.
It's very coincidental.
And it's very interesting, because there are killers that we've seen that could possibly connected to murders beforehand. You know what I mean? It's you look at Otis Toole, look at people like that, where it's just they kind of had a weird, shitty past where they were in a bunch of very interesting circumstances for them to be in for later on to be a serial killer.
Well, Dahmer took quite a few years off after the jogger.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, after the hitchhiker. Yeah.
The hitchhiker.
Yeah. He did take a couple of years off. That is true. But this is an escalation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sure. You don't necessarily, after that initial escalation comes, usually these guys don't stop until they're caught.
Mm.
Now, Ken Bianchi stuck around in Rochester, New York until 1975, when he decided it was time to pull up his stakes and move out to sunny California to live with his cousin, Angelo Bono.
Now, apparently his mother, Kenny, called Angelo Bono and said, "Can my son go live with you? Because he needs a strong dude to hang out with." And Angelo was like, "Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, I teach him the ropes because he's got to know how to fuck." And she's like, "Okay, well, that's great. Thanks."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Kenny was 26 at the time that he moved to L.A. And Angelo Bono, he was 41.
Mm-hmm.
So he was quite a bit older.
Man, so cool.
So cool.
Now, Bono can only be described as an unmitigated asshole with not a single redeeming feature. Now, while Ken at least had the mask of being a loving father, a gentle partner, and a friendly coworker, Angelo Bono was straight dog shit through and through. Born in 1934 to an abusive single mother he referred to only as the cunt.
Yeah.
Angelo was a typical macho tough guy who, as a teenager, idolized convicted robber, kidnapper, and rapist Carol Chessman, a.k.a. the Red Light Bandit.
We're going to find a little bit more about Bono's childhood. Basically, what you find out is that he's a sex offender throughout his entire childhood. He gets pulled out of grade school for grabbing women in the girls' bathroom. He's a fucking monster. And Carol Chessman, who he ends up being his role model, is described, this is described by Darcy O'Brien from the Hillside Stranglers.
Chessman had demonstrated the possibilities of a police ruse. The red light he had attached to his car enabled him to con lovers parked in the hills of Los Angeles into opening their car windows and doors to him. They took him for a policeman. Showing a .45, Chessman would force the girl into his car, drive her to another secluded spot, and usually make her perform oral sex. To Angelo, he was a heroic combination of guts and brains.
Angelo is sort of like the problem child who loved Michael Richards' character in the great movie Problem Child.
A lot like the problem child.
Yes, he liked the bow tie and everything.
I didn't know the problem child will turn out to be a serial killer and rapist.
No, if you go back and watch those movies, he's a dangerous young boy.
Oh, yeah, he's obviously a sociopath in the very beginning.
Right.
Now, we actually don't know much more about Bono's upbringing other than that, because there actually isn't a hell of a whole lot to know about him. This guy is just a straight-up monster whose only purposes in this world were to cause misery and upholster the interiors of cars, which he was reportedly very good at.
That's actually pretty awesome.
But the same thing as Gary Ridgway. What is with serial killers and car detailing?
Well, he was at Gary Ridgway was a car detailer. Angelo Bono worked on upholstery.
Inside, outside. Inside, outside.
Yeah.
My problem is, but why are they so good at this kind of stuff?
They work with their hands. They like the leather.
Yeah, but it's not. I guess when you look over and he's putting a new leather upholstery on the seat, and he's just like, God, this fucking bitch, she doesn't want it. I'm going to get it. I'm going to fuck you right in your ass. I'm going to fuck you right in your ass, you fucking car seat. It looks nice.
You do wonder if at one point he did such a good job upholstering somebody's car that that person picked up the car and looked at him and said, you know what? Even if you're a serial killer, I like what you did.
I like the way it looks.
I like the way it looks.
And you know who said that? Frank Sinatra.
Yep. Is that right? Big blue eyes.
Wife beater and crooner Frank Sinatra.
Oh, isn't that something?
Isn't it fun?
Yeah, yes. Bono did work for him. He did work for one unnamed member of the Supremes.
I don't know why she didn't want to go unnamed.
Strange.
Weird.
Yeah.
But Bono's personal life was just as monstrous as you would imagine.
Do you think that Sinatra like found out that the guy who detailed his car, like did all the interiors of his car, went and killed a bunch of women? He was just like, you know what? I'm going to take out my name off the car because it was a great job.
Yeah. Well, that explains why there's a small earlobe hanging out as well. I guess he never skinned people. But, I mean, can you imagine if Ed Gein had his ability of upholstery?
Oh, well, you got to have a little bit of pizzazz to do upholstery.
That's true.
Yeah. You have to have people skills, you know?
Yeah.
Gein was a little short on those.
Well, Gein was like, you never meet an Etsy salesperson. You know what I mean?
For a reason.
You very rarely meet the people behind the Etsy shops.
Right.
Now, people said that the only time Bono was decent was when he was trying to seduce a woman, which it was also said he was actually very good at.
Hey, you want to do this thing? I heard about this fun game. I'm so glad you came into my shop. I want to do this thing where you scratch my earlobes with your ankles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's get to doing it because I got the drill. Bam, 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 bam.
I'm Frank's ex-wife, Frank Sinatra.
Frank? Mia Farrow?
Yes. I'm pregnant with my son that Frank gave me, Ronan.
Oh, yeah. All right. So I guess I'll fuck around it.
Yeah, that's what people would say, is that at the very beginning, he would be very nice, very charming, and then just a little bit into the relationship, he would just flip.
Sure.
He would absolutely flip, and he would just lose his fucking mind, become extremely abusive, and, I mean, extremely cruel.
Yeah.
But
his friends called him the Italian Stallion. His friends called him the Italian Stallion because his name is Bono, but he would call his own dick the Buzzard because of his foreskin.
Really?
Ugh.
The Buzzard?
He called it the Buzzard.
It seems like the character from the Star Wars Episode 1 who sold him the shitty vehicle.
Watto?
Watto. Who, by the way, some people thought was a Jewish character.
Yeah,
I don't think that's true.
Was it Watto or was it Sebulba?
Maybe Sebulba, one of these things.
It doesn't matter, but either way, he's just like, he fucks people with that.
Yeah, the Buzzard. Come suck on my Buzzard. That's not good.
And this is from an A&E documentary where they talk about some of Bono's other techniques.
And living alone, he used his waterbed to full advantage.
Yeah.
He had a lot of women.
Used his waterbed.
Used the waterbed. I mean, how good?
It's the type of guy who's proud of his waterbed.
Yeah.
And like, this is the thing. So I feel like this is important, ladies or men. When you meet a guy that you want to go out with, ask him, first of all, who's your hero?
Yeah.
All right. If it's a known rapist, it can kind of be like, if you're still into Bill Cosby's comedy, it's like kind of fine because it's like he did influence a lot of us. But if he's he's only known for being a rapist, you can't use that as a hero anymore.
If you just got into Bill Cosby, there's a massive problem. If you're like, I didn't like him until around a year ago. I think his work is really strong.
I like his later stuff, which is actually more of his earlier stuff. But he's got a waterbed.
Yeah.
He's disgusting. It does not make you a better lover to be sloshing around on a semi-lukewarm bed of fucking fungus water.
My friend Pete had a water bed. I would sleep in it. We had two water beds. He would sleep in his. I would sleep in the guest run. And all it does is make you want to pee constantly and have make you have sailor dreams. It's disgusting.
I had a water bed. Well, it was a hand-me-down waterbed.
Even worse.
It was like a hand-me-down of a hand-me-down waterbed. Like this really weird dude gave my brother a waterbed. And when my brother went to college, I got the waterbed.
That's great, Marcus.
God,
that's
just
great.
Covered in Parks's juice.
Yeah, bad for your back, the waterbed. Not a lot of support.
Hey, you want to come over to my apartment? I got four roommates, but they're cool. They don't listen. And I got a waterbed. The problem is I only sleep with my belt on, my buckle on my belt, so I can't sleep face down with my sharp, super cool buckle pierced the bed.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm surprised. No, yeah. I don't know how I keep getting late.
Must have been shocking for him at some point.
Bono married 4 different women and sired 7 children over the course of 20 years, with all but 3 of his wives divorcing him on grounds of cruelty, while the 4th simply ran away and was never seen again.
What we're going to hear, too, is that his first wife, he began to tie up legs, wrists, neck, just like the victims of the Hillside Stranglers later on. He liked to choke. He liked to dominate. He liked to force a woman down and do anal intercourse at her as hard as humanly possible, and fucking what was described by Darcy O'Brien, attacking women's genitalia like a pile driver.
Ugh. And it's very difficult to tie a woman to a waterbed, you know. And
so it's like, imagine trying to tie a marlin up on a pontoon boat.
Difficult but good catch.
Think about how much core strength you need.
Yeah.
Bono raped his daughters.
Well, it's kind of a jump. Now we're getting okay, so now we can't joke anymore.
He raped his daughters, he raped his sons, and was said to have on one occasion sodomized one of his wives in front of their children.
But he said, and he literally, legitimately called that breaking them in.
Yeah.
He would call, like, and he had sex with one of his daughters and then would hand him off to her friend, to his friends, and say, like, we gotta make her good at sex.
Mm. But by 1975, Bono was single, swinging, and fancy free.
Oh, okay, so it's all fun. Yeah,
yeah, man, no weight on his shoulders. No. Man, get rid of that ball and chain.
Good God.
Now, when Kenneth Bianchi showed up in 1975, Angelo Bono had opened up his own car upholstery shop, a nice place by all accounts.
It actually is a very nice place. It's still a car shop.
Somebody just bought it and didn't... They just bought it?
It's all set up.
Yeah, I guess it's already there, yeah.
Yeah, and that was actually Bono's garage. Attached to the garage was Bono's house. That was something else entirely. It wasn't extremely sinister per se, but all of the interior doors had been removed, and the house was without a working kitchen.
I think that's good feng shui. Yeah, no doors, no limits. Everyone is communal.
It's like taking a nice apartment and making it a shitty studio apartment.
Tear the walls down.
Yeah, I think actually it gives you quite a few limits if you don't have a door on your bedroom.
Yeah.
Not if you don't have any self-respect.
That's true. That's how you got to get rid of your limits, dog meat.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. I got a lot of baggage that I got to shed.
Yeah.
And that includes jerking off in front of my roommates.
I'm taking the front door of my apartment out.
Now, since he didn't have a kitchen, Bono ate out for all of his meals, and it was said that he usually stuck to his favorite dish, liver.
Ooh. You know, it's fine. I've eaten liver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
It's not as good as the other organ meats.
Yeah, I know you love entrails.
If he said something like it was sweetbreads, which is sweet with the gland meats, is the thyroid glands of an animal, that's where it gets rough.
Yeah, but every meal...
Yeah.
I like how it tastes like blood. So because I'm sick of biting my own tongue in order to go to sleep.
Yeah. I can't say that this is what I have to do. I eat out for every meal as well.
Bachelor's life.
Yeah. Well, we got the gas turned off in our apartment.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah, you can afford, you know, gas is like $15 a month.
It's the principle.
You know what? It comes down to principle. That's how you a grown man becomes homeless.
No.
You're homeless within your own home.
I'm not even going to get into it. John Doe owns the gas. I'm not John Doe. So I'm not paying the bill.
Interesting.
But
I would also say, too, is that that's a very extreme bachelor's lifestyle. That's how my dad ate. Yeah. When my dad talks about his bachelor life in the early 70s, it was kind of like this. He's like, I owned one recliner. I had a glass coffee table that your mother made me throw out. And he had a towel nailed to the wall for a curtain. He's like, yeah, just eat beans.
Yeah.
Eat nothing but beans.
I know it.
So now we've finally got Kim Bianchi and... Angelo Bono living in Los Angeles. Now
together again. Na, 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 na. I think that would be a good little theme song for them. But copyright says that we can't use that.
Oh, I see.
Now, there are some conflicting reports on the personal nature of Bono and Bianchi's relationship. Some say that the two hated each other and only worked together because they made a good team like Laurel and Hardy.
Oh, Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
Scottie yeah. Pippen and Michael Jordan.
See? Boom. That tension.
Yeah. Yep. That's what you need, a little tension.
You need a little bit,
because
yeah.
Because you want to constantly be one-upping the person silently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With tying girls up.
Yeah, it's different, you know.
But most of the sources that I read say that it was more of a hero worship situation on the part of Bianchi. Ken, heartbroken and no doubt full of hatred for women, showed up in L.A. to find a 41-year-old bachelor with dyed black hair, rings on his fingers, and an almost endless stream of women.
And they would talk about, they met, and he's just like, "You don't know, though. I come out of my fucking life out here. I am up to my hip bones in pussy juice." Yeah. And Bianchi's just like, "That sounds great."
Yeah, this is what one investigator said about Bianchi's, luck with women.
Bianchi had a tough time with broads. I mean, he may have been glib and a smooth, sweet talker, but most women saw right through him. He had no substance.
Why does the detective always seem like more of a jackass than the murderer he's talking about?
They say, I will say, in reading and listening to documentary footage about the Hillside Stranglers, the word broads is thrown around quite a bit.
Women would be good.
Or victims? Just anyone, or victims. I'd say victims, yeah. Or, you know, or ladies. But we're going to see in their relationship a thing that serial killers do a lot of time that I find incredibly fascinating, which is they physicalize the symbolism of their actions. Mm. And so what we have right now is like John Wayne Gacy, he would have to go to the basement to do his secret crimes and secretly be gay, yeah. Right? Ed Gein would have, like, his house was boarded up, where his mother's rooms were boarded up, so, like, symbolically, they were perfectly held in memory while he could live his weird life outside of the rest of the rooms that he could degradate and shit because they weren't his mother's rooms. Mm-hmm. This is an incredible example of two halves of the perfect serial killer finding each other, where you have Bono, who is just pure animal sexuality. He's a disgusting piece of shit that lives only to come. And Bianchi, who is sort of like the glass person psychopath that lies for the pleasure of it and wants to get away with everything and thinks he can. And so these two layers, because Bono couldn't talk to people. They say Bono could barely read and write. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just a dirtbag that just so happened to be so brazen that I think, like, a woman would, like, sleep with him once and be like, "Oh my God," and, like, get up, be like, "I can't believe I did that."
Yeah.
But Bianchi was just this. He was a non-person.
Well, you know what? You've just given me a great idea for a dating app for one person who wants to find another person that would complete themselves to make a perfect serial killer. It's Tenderizer, and you can download the app. It's going to be big, and you just swipe right if you see someone that you think you could murder with.
I could fuck next to that guy.
Yeah, that looks good. I wouldn't mind if his spunk, like, hit my knee. Like, I wouldn't freak out.
Yeah, Ken saw Bono as a role model because Ken was an extremely immature person. They absolutely both were, because Bono was the type of person like a 13-year-old scumbag would idolize, exactly like Bono idolized Carol Chessman.
And Bianchi was kind of frozen in childhood because he just never kind of grew up out of it. He was always kind of act like a petulant kid that when he didn't get what he wanted would throw tantrums.
Mm-hmm. They seem like the kind of guys who would take Jesse James's side when he cheated on Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
It seems like they would be like, "Yeah, Dito Fontis, she is hot.
She's
hotter
hot.
Than Sandra.
Sandra Bullock must not have done him right."
Yeah.
And you know what they also remind me of? Villains from a Stephen King novel.
Yes.
They remind me of the bullies from It, or what you brought up earlier, Kissel, was that sometimes they come back.
Yeah. Absolutely. But whether Bianchi hated Bono or not, we definitely know that Bono strongly disliked Bianchi. What I kept thinking about as well is, like, you know those old Looney Tunes cartoons where, like, there were the two bulldogs, like the big, gigantic, tough bulldog and the little tiny bulldog
Let's rape him. Let's rape him, big dog.
I don't remember that episode.
No, that was one of those band ones, like the one that all the super racist Japanese ones.
Yeah. Or Scrappy and Scooby-Doo.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, after a few months of sleeping on Angelo's couch, Bianchi was forced out by his cousin and got his own apartment. And in November of 1976, Bianchi met a woman he would eventually father a son with, Kelly Boyd. Now, Kelly was, by all accounts, a painfully normal woman that perfectly matched Bianchi's, as Henry said, glass-like appearance. She said that Ken was gentle. She said that he was a kind man to her at every turn. And the two moved in together in early 1977.
Now, you remember, the one thing that we didn't really cover is that Ken also had a fascination with being a police officer. When he got out of high school, he applied to be a police officer, and they said no, he didn't have what it takes, so he became a security officer. And a part of what he'd do, he, as a security guy, he would walk around, he'd steal stuff to give to his many girlfriends. So at this point, he's bumming around doing security work, but he feels a sense of inadequacy.
Right.
He wants to do something more. Mm-hmm. So he decides he wants to get into the therapy business, right. which is true. He wanted to be a psychotherapist. Yeah. Because his friend said that he gave great advice, but the problem is that he was a terrible student, and so he couldn't go through the school to become to take psychology classes.
Well, the reason I got into podcasting was because my friends said I was great over the phone. That's true.
But you're great over the phone.
What's so weird about the people who want to become a cop and they fail to become a cop? You have the George Zimmerman effect.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Where John Wayne Gacy.
George Zimmerman was just like, I'm getting in my car, I'm patrolling the streets, and we're like, we didn't ask you to do that.
Don't do that. You're a fucking moron.
You're an idiot. Yeah.
Ugh.
Anyway, there's nothing worse than someone who wants to be a cop and can't be a cop. You think cops are bad.
Whoa.
Imagine someone who can't even achieve that mild goal.
A wannabe cop sounds like one of the worst human beings on the face of the planet. Just switch. Figure out how to do something else. Or take joy in being a security officer. Like, do a thing. Like, do something. But Kenneth Bianchi always had this problem. Always had an inferiority complex. So now he wants to be able to have influence over someone.
Right.
Yeah, he wants to be a psychotherapist. And, of course, he's not going to go through all the rigmarole of getting a degree or anything like that. So he came up with a nice little scam. He placed a fake job ad in a local Los Angeles newspaper. He took a copy of a diploma that an applicant named Steve Walker had sent in, wrote in his own name, and hung it on the wall. And not surprisingly, despite a good location and bargain basement prices, only one person showed up.
And shocking. So what's really interesting, too, is that his wife would come by and see these degrees, and she'd be like, "Why? Where do these fucking degrees came from? I didn't know you were a psychotherapist." He's like, yeah, I just didn't tell you about it. I didn't tell you about it. It was like all of this shit we're being like, again, ladies, men. If a man opens up a therapist's office, and he has never been a therapist
up until that point, not once,
and he's almost 30. He's got to get out of the situation.
But I do watch a lot of Long Island Medium, so I feel like I know how to talk to people.
I could talk to people, yeah. I love The View.
Yeah, but going back to what that person was talking about, the detective discussing with the problems with women, this is how shallow he is. He's as shallow as the piece of paper.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no depth at all.
And not only that, but, you know, you got back in the 1970s, 50s, 60s, like, people would marry each other barely knowing the other person.
Right.
They would court, then they would date, then they would get married, or in their case, they would move in together, like in a very short period of time. People just didn't talk about their past at all.
Yeah, so those of you who are single, don't feel so bad, because sometimes you just don't have to jump right into marriage. You know, all of these guys got married. All of them got married.
Yeah.
Bono got married 4 times.
Yeah.
I think the majority of people we talk about have been married.
Yeah, and that's what we always say. You know, they're like, oh man, if he can get married, why can't I get married?
It's because,
like,
you just lower your standards down to a zero and marry a serial killer.
Right. That's it.
Now, Ken, faced with the costs of opening and closing a business.
Oh, it's tough to close. Wow. Yeah.
God. Yeah. Back rent, man. You got to pay all that back rent. He needed money, and he turned to Angelo for help, because Angelo had recently gotten into the pimping game and decided to bring in Ken on the deal.
Well, it's like a loose thing where the pimping kind of started off as this idea where he had a girlfriend that he thought maybe he could flip into a prostitute, and then it went bad for everybody, especially the woman.
Oh, absolutely. The first prostitute that Bianchi and Bono essentially abducted was a 16-year-old girl from Phoenix named Sabra Hanna, who was told by Bono at a party that she could earn $500 a week by posing as a photographic model
for him.
There's
no such thing as a photographer. And again, I'm going to say this again. Everybody's a photographer. I'm a photographer. Oh. Anybody can just say you're a photographer. You got to get the money up front, at least.
It must be so weird for women to just constantly being sought after and just, like, people want to take pictures of you. Someone did take a picture of me on the subway, but because it was so, I was so freakish.
Why? Because you're tall?
Yes, and as a matter of fact,
did you ask asked them that?
No, this is, I went to a bar randomly to meet up with my friend Jason Kepper. You know Kep.
Oh, yeah.
And this woman looks at me. I'm like, why are you looking at me? You know, I thought maybe she knew me from Fox or maybe she's a fan.
Something, yeah.
And she turns out, she looks at me. She said, I'm so sorry. I said, why are you apologizing? She said, I took a picture of you on the subway today because you were so big. And I'm like,
fuck
what?
You.
What do you mean? And I was like, what do you
think? I will say that I kind of saw a view in your life when we were hanging out at the airport for 15 hours, when we were together in Chicago.
It's fun.
And literally, people kept, we had a great time.
Yeah.
But people kept, every other person was like, huh, you play basketball? Yeah. Everybody just was just like, oh, big guy, huh? You're really big. Look at your knees. There's like four knees next to each other. And I was like, oh, stuff. And I was like, Jesus Christ, leave him alone. He's not even that big.
I'm not that big.
No, I've known much larger gentlemen than you. For
fatter,
example,
big fatter.
Your brother.
That's
your
correct. Brother, my 6'11" brother.
Yeah, and he's got bigger knees and a wider head.
He wears skirts so people can see them. Anyway, I digress.
Now, desperate for money, Sabra moved into Angelo's house and was soon forced into doing jobs. Bianchi took to the pimping business like a duck to water, having finally been given the opportunity to treat women the way he'd always wanted to treat them. Free of personal consequence.
If a man ever says that he wants to be a pimp, he is a shallow, empty fuckface. Like, that is just, what an aspiration to think, oh, I want to sell humans to people.
I know there's a slightly different cultural norm when it comes to pimping and things like that.
I understand the confidence. I sound I'm the whitest human being. I know that a pimping is not the easiest job, and it takes a strong back and spine to do it. But
yes.
Now, this whole thing about him being, you know, wanting to be free of consequence, that's at the core of Kenneth Bianchi, and possibly at the core of many Double Live, there's no way he could have done it. Serial killers like Gacy, Bundy, BTK, Ridgeway, the guys, when they're caught, their wives, their neighbors, their coworkers, everybody's like, it's not Ted Bundy. It's not John. How could it be John Wayne Gacy? How could it be Gary Ridgway? These guys would never hurt a fly.
Yeah, they're little nothing. They're simpering little idiots. Or they're like, you know, John Wayne Gacy, he's a blowhard. Everybody hates him. You know, it's who cares about him? Yeah. He dresses at clowns for parties. He doesn't kill people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And with anonymous victims, these killers are free to do everything that they would so very much like to do in their quote-unquote normal lives, but are prevented from doing so because of the grave consequences that would befall them should they ever actually go through with it.
But now we're looking at this pimping game. For these two guys are the allowances that they gave themselves in order to become a serial killer, like we talk about all the time. The pimping became just a way to, it wasn't about the selling of the women the money at this point, because I think like it started off as being like, we're gonna make money and do what we love, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But then it becomes about the violence and the ownership.
Yeah.
And that's when it gave them the, because now I see a touch of this power, it feeds me to want to then really strike out, and instead of doing all this corporate pimping business, I need to really get out there and fucking hit the indie scene.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what these guys do. They give them just, we talk about it again and again, they give themselves these little allowances that allow them to eventually murder, I don't know, once every couple weeks, once a week when it becomes absolutely normal, but these guys are still doing it in consequence-free zones, and that's why virtually no serial killers are legally insane. They understand the consequences perfectly, and they kill anonymous victims to avoid those consequences.
I do have to say, I have a poster in my apartment, and it does say consequence-free zone, and everybody knows I can eat whatever I want, and I can like
no rules here,
no rule, consequence-free zone. Can't get fat on a Thursday.
It should be like a no-calorie zone.
Yeah,
I think that would, because then it doesn't involve making your house sound like a place where women go to die.
Oh yeah. Good point. Yeah.
But Ed Gein, what we talk about, Ed Gein though was nuts.
Ed Gein
was sick.
He was legally insane. And these other guys, they're ill. They have antisocial personality disorder. They have definite problems with their brain.
Dahmer was sick,
yeah.
You know, he just, you know, but ambitious.
Yep.
Yeah, but Ed Gein, he was legally insane. He was schizophrenic. He didn't know what he was doing. I mean, it was just by happenstance that he was able to get away with the murder of Mary Hogan.
Yeah, he was a slack-jawed wackadoo, and he was just a bit of an oddball.
Yeah, and he killed Bernice Worden, you know, who he knew. He liked her. He saw her every single day. He knew that people had seen him there. There were records. You know, he
desperately wanted to play her boobies like a couple of wine bags, and then he just took the extra step by making them wine bags.
Just happenstance, like that great Gwyneth Paltrow movie, Sliding Doors. You never
love
know.
Sliding
you
doors.
Never know what reality is going to change. change.
You never know. But at any rate, soon after.
If only he had just a couple of coupons for free two scoops at the local malt shop.
He maybe wouldn't have killed all those women. Yeah.
Maybe not. But at any rate, after Sabrahana was forced into sex slavery, Bono and Bianchi picked up another girl, 15-year-old Becky Spears, but she was thankfully rescued soon after her abduction.
By a good-hearted John.
Yeah.
Which is true, is that a dentist bought her to have sex with her and then saw the state that she was in. She was all beat up, and she said, my pimps are beating the shit out of me. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to Richard Gere you. We're doing this. You're free.
Pretty woman.
Ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. And she's just like, that's amazing. He's like, but the thing is, I own you now.
Well, that's not so bad.
No.
I mean, it's just hilarious, the idea of this woman being like, they're terrible. I think they're going to be serial killers. She's like, I'm a dentist. You think I give a shit? I'm the biggest sociopath on earth.
Actually, he was a criminal defense lawyer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a criminal defense lawyer because after
he was a criminal defense lawyer who picked up prostitutes regularly?
He was having a great time.
You don't
pay him to come, you pay him to leave. That's what Charlie Sheen says.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was a criminal defense lawyer, and after he put this 15-year-old girl on a plane back to Phoenix, back to her hometown, Bono called him up, said, hey, I'm going to beat the fuck out of you.
You don't think I won't beat up a lawyer? I love to beat up lawyers. They got special gloves I wear in order to beat up lawyers. They call my lawyer beating gloves, you fucking dog sucker.
But because this guy was a criminal defense lawyer, he had connections with the Hell's Angels.
Yeah, you think, you're gonna take these guys as angels? They're soft, little, fat little boys. They got little wings. They're gonna come over here. Oh, man. You're big.
It's hard to say what profession people hate more, a pimp or a lawyer. This is quite a feud.
I think people hate pimps more.
People always make lawyer jokes. You can say anything about a lawyer and people laugh.
Yeah, what do you call 10 lawyers tied together at the bottom of the ocean?
A good thing?
A good start. Yeah.
A good start?
No, there's only been one pimp on network television. There's been a shit ton of lawyers.
Sugar Bear was a hero.
Huggy Bear.
No, and the WWF. That's when he was doing it.
The Godfather.
Godfather, yeah.
Yeah, he did all right. Yep. No. Pimping was indeed not easy for the Godfather.
It was hard for him. He had a bad back and terrible knees, and Stone Cold kept on hitting him with a chair. Pimping is not easy.
Now, the drop in revenue caused Bianchi to miss payments on the brand new Cadillac he had purchased, and the car was repossessed, which only increased Bianchi's rage towards women. Now, the last straw for Bianchi came in October of 1977. Bono had purchased a list of clients from a prostitute named Deborah Noble, who delivered it with her friend Yolanda Washington. And during a bout of small talk during the transaction, Yolanda mentioned the specific stretch of Sunset Boulevard where she worked, a slip of the tongue that would soon prove to be fatal. Now, the list was supposed to be of clients who liked to have prostitutes visit them in their homes. But in reality, the list was the exact opposite. Clients who like to go out to eat, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that's disgusting. Yeah, you wrote that. I think that is the worst thing you've ever wrote. What is wrong with you? And you smiled the way
the way you give me finger guns. You guys at home didn't see him give finger guns.
So proud of himself for that.
It was wrong with going out to eat.
That's disgusting. It's referring to a prostitution.
Sex work is good work. You can have sex work and still feel like a positive person.
I do agree with that. But at the same time, I feel weird. It's like, are you going to eat the pussy of a prostitute? I guess so.
I certainly wouldn't say I'm going out to eat get in my car and then go trolling for prostitutes.
But your wife's there with your child being like, I just made dinner. I'm going out to
eat. Yeah, I don't think she understands. It's an analogy.
No, it's going to meet a girl in a room. And so, because that's the thing, is that they call up the clients and say like, hey, I've got this girl.
It's call-out service,
right? Yeah, call-out, not call-in.
Well, what does it mean if you order the Bloomin' Onion when you're out?
You're talking Outback.
I saw that once. Yeah, Bloomin' Onion. That's for a prolapsed asshole. Because, you know, it kind of comes out.
Yeah,
the prolapsed asshole comes out.
You saw that once?
I was in high school, during my lunch break, when I was working construction in Texarkana.
Texarkana is a beautiful part of our country, and I'm so glad the Mexicans gave it up.
It is beautiful, although I don't think they have construction in Texarkana. I think it's destruction, right? They just break down buildings?
No, it was construction. I was putting in insulation in a juvenile detention center.
Yeah, they had to make a bunch of shanties for their shantyville.
And then how did you see a prolapsed...
There was this guy that brought a suitcase of porn, because we were journeyman construction workers.
Oh, it wasn't a person. It was a magazine.
No, it wasn't a person. No, I didn't just see
it.
It
was shown to you by a gnarly old man who showed you an old fucking dirty magazine from his fucking shithouse.
He got busted for peeping on his own daughter.
Okay.
Well,
Texarkana.
Another beautiful story from the heartland of America.
No.
Texas red, is white, not and the blue heartland. Runs deep in the veins of the people of Texas.
Yeah.
Now, these two, after they got this trick list, they had no idea where to find Deborah Noble, but they sure as hell remembered exactly where Yolanda Washington worked. So on October 17th, 1977, Bianchi and Bono drove to the Sunset Strip and picked her up. This is what Bianchi said when asked how it went down.
She was a hooker. Angelo went and picked her up. I was waiting on the street. He drove her around to where I was. I got in the car. We got on the freeway. I fucked her and killed her. We dumped her body off and that was it. Nothing to it.
So, but the just one person had sex with her and killed her.
I'm certain that they both probably did it.
Yeah, they both actually had sex with her.
Oh, okay.
And we'll get into why that was the LAPD's very first clue in the Hillside Strangler case. And of course, Yolanda wouldn't have gotten in the car with them willingly, but Bono, using a police badge that he had stolen from a movie set, told the woman he was an undercover cop, she was under arrest, and she had to get in the car. And her naked body was found on October 18th, 1977, on a hillside near the Ventura Freeway, the first victim of the Hillside Stranglers.
All right, well, that's part one.
Man, it just feel like Diary of a Scuzzball.
Yeah, they are disgusting, disgusting people.
It's like the Sisterhood of Traveling Pants if everybody fucking got strangled to death in a fucking sex dungeon.
Oh, I thought you were going to say if everyone dribbled in their pants. The Sisterhood of the dribbling pants. Oh, disgusting.
Good Lord.
All right, bunch of bastards.
But this is one of the one of those classic big hitters that we do that when I'm done reading, I feel like I have to take a shower.
Yeah, I feel like I want to bathe right now.
Yeah, I'm also sitting in a puddle of my own sweat because it's summertime.
Summertime.
And I have a bit of the, I got a bit of a gazpacho going on in my pants right now.
Oh, right, okay. Well,
have you ordered your six-pack of Gold Bond from Amazon
yet?
Yeah,
dude.
Oh, yes. We all powder.
I don't powder.
You don't powder?
No, of course I don't powder.
That's dumb. You gotta powder.
I'm a fucking desert person. I don't need to powder. All you assholes are always bitching about how hot it is. I'm like, you don't fucking know hot until you've been working in a fucking detention center in Texarkana.
Yeah, with a plumber who peeps on his daughter.
Yeah,
you're putting
smiling.
In insulation. You're putting in insulation. You've got flannel on so the insulation doesn't get into your skin. Whatever. But the fun thing is that we were all on stilts, and me and my friend used to have races. When the ice cream truck would come by, we'd have races to see who would get there
first. It's never a fun thing.
You guys
it's always
like
so
Mad
sad.
Max. It's like somewhere it's between fucking David Copperfield and Mad Max was your childhood. I was sick of hearing it.
You had to find the fun.
I don't think you did, I have to say.
It was ice cream.
Okay, very good.
And butthole mutilation.
Yeah, exactly.
We all grow up different.
That's correct.
We're all snowflakes.
All right, so we got much more to discuss with the Hillside Stranglers.
We really do. This is a fascinating story. We're going to get into the string of murders in the next episode. We're also going to get into what happens after Kim Bianchi gets caught. It's really fascinating stuff. These guys, I mean, this is some of the most interesting stuff we've done since Henry Lee Lucas and Otis Toole. This stuff is great. I guess as far as news goes, man, we got a shitload of shows coming up.
Yeah,
you guys
we do.
Know that. We're coming to Atlanta in June. We're coming to L.A. in July. Mm-hmm. We're coming to the U.K. in October. Be sure to get your tickets for that. We're very close to selling out London. And we are also coming very close to selling out Manchester. Go to gigsandtours.com and search Last Podcast on the Left to get your tickets for that.
And I like to thank Anna Lewis and Rhiannon, who run a podcast called IRL UK, and they are they also write for Heat Magazine, and they're helping us out in the UK, but spread the word that we're doing shows there. They're both really great girls, and the their podcast is a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Really,
and I'll fucking
that.
Give a shout out to Andy Condon, who's hassling me. He was one of the three people that gave me a 5-star rating on Netflix characters, and I'd say thank you. Thank you for doing that.
So you literally, it did so bad, you can call out the people who liked it by name.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Going strong. Give independent artists a chance.
And, of course, all of these places we're going to all over the United States. We've got a lot more in the works right now. And if you guys want to make sure that we come to your hometown, go to patreon.com/lastpodcast on the left and give a little bit to our Patreon. Yeah. A little bit, every single little bit helps. Even if you can give just $1 a month, every tiny little bit helps. We've gotten such a fucking amazing response on that. And thank you guys so much for your continued support on this. This shit is life-changing, seriously.
I mean, and, you know, I mean, honestly, the show is doing so well. We just passed Mark Maron's podcast on iTunes, which was a huge accomplishment, you know. So thank you guys so much.
It really means a lot, the fact that people have been supporting us for these years, and it's kind of coming to a head, and it's really the magic of Satan himself that it all works out. Mm-hmm. It's just the deep flows of the evil that runs in the essential nature of the universe.
Yeah, either
and
that
for
or
our Fox News fans who love Christianity and Jesus, thank you too. I don't care.
Yeah, either that or it's, you know, the collective unconsciousness of all of us coming together to form this wonderful thing. We all have different beliefs.
Mostly boo. I thought you guys were fun to drink with.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah, that's where it started. Awesome. Yeah.
But no, thanks so much for supporting last podcast. And then, of course, Abe Lincoln's Top Hat for Politics, Roundtable of Gentlemen, just kind of a fun time hanging out with your friends. What else? Page seven for entertainment news.
Mm-hmm. And sex and other human activities. No, I do not have a psychotherapy degree, but I never claim to.
No, that's, thank God. Thank God. And
You should not do that. In fact, we have a disclaimer at the beginning saying that we are not medical professionals.
No, they're the opposite. They're comedians. Or well, I guess you're not a comedian.
No,
Marcus.
I'm a radio guy.
I would literally call you a medical unprofessional.
Yes, by definition.
Yeah.
And check out Marcus's show, The Lucky Bone Show. It's very good.
Mixcloud.com/Marcus Parks. Thank you, everyone who's been listening.
Okay, and also I have to bring a big announcement. I'm on Instagram. I figured out my password.
Woo!
I'm Ben Kissel 1. I have 1,800 followers. I've used it like 4 times. So you can follow me on Instagram at Ben Kissel 1 or on Twitter at Ben Kissel. Henry is at Dr. Fan Tasty
on Instagram. The last podcast is on Instagram at LP on the left, and I am on Twitter at Henry Loves You.
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter at Marcus Parks and on Instagram at Marcus Parks. Ben, have you posted anything on Instagram since you got your password back?
No, but I got a picture of me with Ben Carson that I'm just waiting.
We
can't wait. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Heil Gein.
Hail me.
And Megustalations.
For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to cavecomedyradio.com.